Good morning, podcast audience. Local 304, National Postal Mail Handlers Union, and of course, my branch, Columbus, Ohio. This morning's podcast, I want to talk to you a little bit about the state of affairs in our office in Columbus, Ohio. Now, I got to tell you, not having numbers and productivity and the same period last year data, I'm just speaking to you about what's visible to the employees there. Again, we still have management pressing on the badge rack or time cards being locked in a badge rack. And again, this is what you call pushing a bad decision on part of the plant manager. Currently, as I said in previous podcasts, we have 4, 5, 6 starting times on a tour. I mean, it's just kind of crazy how meticulous they think they plan the work hours. First of all, they use this relevant data processing system called F1 to determine how many people are needed, when they're needed, which has been shown year after year that it's not an effective program, but they still use it. But nonetheless, you have several starting times on a tour. And if the plant manager expects those supervisors to be at that badge rack and opened when you need access to your badge, again, I'm willing to bet you, at least everyone who hears this podcast, probably had to do a 1260 or two within the past week. Well, post office is going to double down on that decision. And here's what's going to start happening, from my understanding. If you miss clock ring punches, now the plant manager is instructing supervisors to have conversation with you, a.k.a. PDIs. I think that's rather foolish, and I think it is intentionally set up to create a very negative work atmosphere. If the supervisors can't ensure that the badge racks are open when you need them now, well, what's going to start happening when the agency starts wanting to do PDIs and discipline for missing clock rings? I think that's real crazy. I think at the very least, I understand the concept of badge control, but why don't you get the concept or get the practice in play so that it's efficient, and then you can hold people accountable? You know, it definitely seems that our plant manager, his concept of fixing Columbus is a little different from what what anybody's used to. He focuses on taking pictures in the parking lot. He focuses on making sure you don't have your swipe card available to you when you need it. He focuses on things of this nature rather than focus on something very simple like, I don't know, how about making sure we got the right doctor numbers on the placards that you assign to mail every day? See, something as intangible or tangible as that would increase your mail flow, and all you did was perfected the system of how we dispatch mail. Currently, mail going to dock door 60 has a placard that says dock door 15. Well, again, I understand that placards move the mail, but it just goes to show how if your intention is not sincere with trying to fix a problem, or the process that you want to put in play is counterproductive, when you could be doing productive things, I don't even begin to understand that. And maybe, I'm not sure, maybe, again, I wasn't in Cleveland, but maybe that's why you were asked to leave Cleveland. Maybe, I'm just taking a wild guess. But I would like to let you know that you can feel comfortable knowing that Cleveland is on the upswing. I guess they brought another manager in there to fix what couldn't get fixed previously. Even though, from my understandings, Cleveland was left in a bit of a shamble I understand that they're on the upswing because they brought another manager in after our acting plant manager left there. So maybe lessons learned is maybe let's not do some of the things that you did in Cleveland, and you can maybe have a little success in Columbus. I'm just going on a limb. And again, I don't have any factual data. I just have phone calls and emails from people who like to keep me informed of situations that could involve my work environment. And I would also like to add that, you know, maybe instead of parking spaces and time cards being the most important thing in your concept of fixing the office, maybe you could take a look at why we have multiple pay locations assigned to one bid. I'm just saying maybe. See, these are some of the things that management can do to let the employees know that I really do care about your quality of work life. Now, I understand you've got committees coming in and things of this nature with videographs and all that sounds nice. But while you can make changes that can instantly affect the quality of work life, you choose to concentrate on parking spaces and time cards. I'm just going to put that out there. And one last comment to the plant manager. I would love to sit down and speak with you or share some of this with you, but you consistently choose to take the position that I'm not the branch president, and you know that not to be true, but you take that position, therefore you won't have any dialogue with me. So this is how I have to address you. In a word to the supervisors, SDOs, listen, you are killing your employees. How long do you think people can have steady diets of 10 and 12 hours, 6 days a week that don't really want to be there 10, 12 hours? And no, I don't want to hear as a response, well, that's the job. That's not the job. If you would take the time, all of you get together, go in a room, get one contract, and do some studying on Article 8, listen, if you use Article 8 properly and you properly utilize your overtime desired list, and just for the benefit of new employees who hear this podcast for the first time, your overtime desired list is a list composed of volunteers. And when you sign the overtime desired list, what you are actually saying to the management, if I might paraphrase, I want to work 7 days a week, 12 hours a day. That's really what you're saying, because the contractual language says that's the extent that they can work you. Now, I ask you, those of you that are on the overtime desire list, do you notice how many days you don't get maxed out, but MHAs or up until a few days ago, casuals were working over 8 hours? You see, as a result of management not understanding and properly utilizing Article 8 in the overtime desire list, they are forcing people who don't want to work the overtime to work inordinate amounts of overtime. And let me tell you something. You push that body to the point where it breaks down, it don't come back to where it was ever again. So management, you have the tools. You just have to learn to use them properly. And again, a simple note, simple little buzz point for you is any day you have MHAs working over 8 hours, just ask yourself, did I max out my overtime desire list? And once you max out your overtime desire list, again, those individuals who volunteer to work the 12-hour days, once you max them and use them properly, you don't have to work your MHAs as many hours as you do right now. Because, listen, and I understand that working all those hours, you love the check. Don't get me wrong. The check is very, very lovely, and you appreciate it. But I'm saying, if you are a person who don't want to be there 10, 12 hours a day, and there is a person who wants to be there, and supervision can't make that happen. See, that's a problem. And if you fix that problem, again, just by operating professionally and contractually, you resolve an issue, and again, it should increase your work environment. I'm just saying.
And as I bring my Monday morning podcast to a close, I'm going to close with a direct conversation to the union in Citygate. Listen, folks, your members are losing confidence in your ability to represent them. And I am definitely not being cynical. I'm being very sincere. I'm talking about conversation that comes to me that we hear in the office. Listen, you got to step your game up a little bit. I don't know what it is. I mean, they're not happy with the representation that they're getting right now. And I think that, again, as a union, you have to understand that your members are not really happy or satisfied with you. And again, you have to get together and come up with a game plan that you increase that satisfaction rate. That's what I'm saying to you. You can take it however you want to take it. But the fact of the matter is, again, I'm starting to get more and more requests from people who had discipline that the union, the branch took care of. And I'm looking at it like, come on, folks, what am I looking at here? I'm looking at a case or two where we're not being very thorough as a branch. And if we're not being thorough, then we're not giving the members the best that they, you know, we're not giving them the best. And I know we are capable of giving them the best. Sometimes we get lackadaisical until we get that nudge and you wake up. Well, I need the branch to wake up. I need you to wake up. Again, you can hear that as your branch president, or you can hear that just as a union member saying to the branch in Columbus, come on, get a little fire underneath your feet, and let's try to step up our representation of the membership. And just for clarification, to those who like to hear my podcast and record sections of it and document the minute within the podcast that I say a particular thing, when I said I'm getting cases, again, I do EEOs. And as a part of my EEO, the person I'm representing showed me a lot of paperwork. So let's just be clear, again, that Branch President Hodge is still in compliance with his, I like to giggle every time I say that, his suspension that's been going on about over 2 years now, but I'm still in compliance, and I don't have any live grievances. I don't have any live union cases. Branch President Hodge assists members with EEOs, and I'll just leave it right there. Just so we're clear, I'm not doing grievances. I'm doing EEOs. That's my Monday morning podcast. Tomorrow, I'll have some contractual issues we can discuss. Have a great day.
180 degrees.
New.
Direct.